You're listening to Our Stories, a storytelling podcast that elevates the lived experiences of Chicago's migrant and refugee communities. I'm Chris Hsu, and along with my co-host Ali Toro, we'll share candid conversations with the inspiring individuals and advocates at the forefront of key issues affecting these communities, and we'll have plenty of fun along the way. Let's get started. Welcome to Our Stories, a podcast powered by Trellis. I'm Chris Hsu, joined by
Ali Tarok.
We're here to share the wonderful stories of Chicago's immigrant and refugee community. We look forward to stories of resilience and hope. And we're going to share a bit more today about our stories and what brought us here today and the genesis of this project. And we look forward to you joining us as we share, as we laugh, as we maybe cry, and join us along this journey.
Let's learn more a little bit about each other. I know you are my friend. I've been working with you and for you, but I want you to tell me more about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Ali. And again, I'll share a bit about me. Again, I'm Chris. I am a proud dad of six kids. I'm a resident here in the Chicago area. Grew up in Dallas, Texas, and often I'm asked, Ali, like, how did I stay in Chicago? And I find that it's the best city in the world. It's a beautiful place to call home, and I'm excited to share a bit more about my journey here as we share that with those here today. So
this is the best city in the world. I totally agree. I always mention Chicago is my soulmate. So I arrived here 12 years ago as a refugee, and I was a political activist in my country, and my journey led me to arrive in Chicago, and I started from scratch, and I've been so honored to work an advocate for refugees and see many great people like Chris, okay, who creates opportunities for refugees and immigrants in Chicago and this country. And that one of the reasons we are here today to shed light on some challenges, success stories, and raising awareness. Yeah.
Ali, tell me a little bit more. We work together, mm-hmm. but let's introduce how we met and how we've gotten to become friends over the past 3 years.
So it's still fresh in my head. So, you know, when you are here as a refugee, you know, the first job is just survival job. Okay, then when you get the second job, try to climb the ladder. Okay, you try to change your financial status. Okay, instead of getting your, you know, dignity or your dream job. So it was in my career pathway until I met you. Okay, so it was, you know, I was doing many, many things. Okay, it was not based on my background, my skills. And for this first time, when you walk into the Passages Charter School, I was director of operations over there. It was not really based on my education and my background. But, you know, first, your outfit was totally different. So it was very interesting. And you were so welcoming, you know. I was always a little bit insecure to introduce myself or talk about myself, but you know, you were so welcoming, and I told you, hey, I'm Ali, director of operations, and you know, I hope you can understand my accent. Yeah, and I still remember I told you I like your outfit. Almost every week I tell you I like your outfit. So yeah, but your energy, you know, your smile, you know, you were so welcoming. I really didn't feel I'm talking to, you know, another American person. So, you know, from the beginning, I felt, okay, I finally found my friend. Yeah. So tell me what you remember about me.
I have a follow-up to that first, because there's going to be people listening to that are laughing about the outfit comment. On four different occasions in the corporate world, I had violations of dress codes for either wearing socks that were too short or a shirt that was untucked or a blazer that was the wrong material. So thank you for appreciating my outfit. It's Yeah, Ali, I remember the same thing. You hit exactly on it. There's an experience when you meet someone that you connect with and you enjoy their energy, their spirit, the spirit of resilience and just humility of doing the very best they can regardless of the circumstance. And I found that I learned more from you in those early months of our professional relationship as well as our friendship, that I just was inspired. And I think that's where it was like, man, I've got to learn more about you as a person and learn more from you as a professional. And I think that's been what's been really fulfilling for me. And I've thoroughly enjoyed getting to know you.
Yeah. And honestly, one of the things, it was kind of a unique experience for me with you that, you listen to me, you respect me, and you show me from the beginning you trust me. Okay? You trust my knowledge, my background, my skills. And from day one, I didn't feel I'm in a relationship top down, or you are, especially when you are an immigrant or refugee, you always carry some insecurity. But anytime when I'm with you, I'm talking to you, I'm at the meeting with you, even your presence, if you don't say anything, you empower me. Okay, it reminds me, okay, I have strength, I am enough, I'm equal with others in this country. So, don't get me wrong, I really appreciate Chicago people here from the beginning, very, very welcoming. And as I said, Chicago is my soulmate. But, when you speak English with an accent, okay, when you don't know many things, you try to learn, or, many people try to help you, but they don't give you the opportunities. Okay, always keep you in some insecurity spot. And you are, in my professional career, okay, not my personal life, I can tell you, you are one of the really rare people who empower me, believe me, trust me. And now I'm the director of policy and advocacy at Trellis. And that also under your leadership, I was convinced to continue my education. I said, okay, I can do it, honestly. And I'm getting my doctoral degree in law and policy. And my dissertation focuses on refugee employment barriers in Illinois. And I don't want to talk that much, but I have to mention this, that in my personal life that, I was very indecisive to have my own child. Okay? But my friendship, I cannot tell you, I cannot call our relationship, work relationship, because I really believe, I really feel that you are my friend. Just talking to you and, you show me, okay, in our hierarchy, you are my boss, but you show me, okay, we are friends, okay, we are equal. And your personal story is really inspiring. And I thought, okay, I can do it. I can become a father. I can become a better person, okay, if I bring my child here. And yeah, one of the reason now I'm a father, I have an almost 18 month old daughter, it's you. Yeah.
That's you deserve the credit. I appreciate the kind words. I want to get to that. You mentioned something that I think is really important for the heart of our podcast, and you talked about welcoming. And I would say one of the things that we want to convey is a step further, which is belonging. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, I think no matter who you are, in my background and yours, we have this struggle to fit in. And we're managing other people's expectations or what they may see of us. And really what we're chasing is belonging. And we're chasing confidence in who we are. And that sense of belonging, the power of that, resides in us, and where we build a community that is rooted in dignity and a belief in this power of belonging. And I believe that's the heart of why we're doing our stories, and that's what we want to bring forward in the stories we share. And I appreciate you sharing yours, and we'll get more into that. But I wanted to ask you if you could spend a little bit more time on, as you've experienced some of those moments here in Chicago of like, I'm trying to fit in, I'm trying to chase the job that I need to have to survive. We call it the survival job trap for a reason. And then when you started to find that confidence in yourself, you found it, that I belong here, that I deserve to be a director and a large nonprofit and a PhD candidate. So I think it would be good for us to spend a little bit of like, how did you get from that sense of fitting in to belonging and then finding your voice in through that process?
So yeah, it's a very good question and a long story actually. I remember when I arrived here, I was 27, close to 30. I was top student in university in my country in political science, but I couldn't speak English. And I was waiting, I was under UNHCR program, waiting to come to United States for 16 months. And you know, I was always thinking, okay, because of my political activities, and I fought for democracy and human rights in my country, and people really validate my activities, okay, in my country. When I arrive here, probably I won't face so many challenges. But from the beginning, as soon as I landed in O'Hare, I realized, no, okay, so my expectations was wrong. And they told me, okay, thank you. Okay, thank you for all your activities. Here is dustpan and broom. Okay, you have to start from entry level position immediately. And I knew, okay, I don't want to, you know, stay at that. I got it. Okay, at that moment, I think it was very fast. And I knew my only solution is education. I have to continue my education, because the regime banned me from studying in university, and I wanted to finish it. But you know, I faced, you know, enormous challenges. You know, even I was unable to ask for a glass of water, okay, in English, and I couldn't express myself. And then I thought, okay, what else I can do? And I realized, okay, there is no really support system for refugees. Okay, there is a system. Okay, they try. Okay, so many good people try to do their best to provide services to refugee and immigrant population. Okay, but the real support, which can, you know, requires, you know, government support, doesn't exist. Okay, and I have to stand on my own feet and just try to survive. Okay, for the second time in my life, I have to survive. Okay, the first time when I was arrested in Iran, okay, by the regime. Then the second time when I arrived here and I started winter, I arrived in winter time and said, oh shoot, okay, if I don't survive, okay, I can become homeless easily and nobody cares. Okay, and that fear of becoming homeless and nobody cares really pushed me to work hard. And in very short period, you know, I remember working hard and studying English, you know, 7 hours, 8 hours. And you know, it was a very up and down moment. I thought, okay, I cannot learn English. Okay, I cannot, you know, get a better job. And this is what it is. And some, honestly, a couple of times came to my mind, if I go back to my country and go back to prison again, would be easier. Okay, so at least, you know, I can tell certain people, hey, I'm a political prisoner, but here, okay, I'm a dishwasher. So, and yeah, I'm just that type of people. I don't give up, you know. I just wanted to say, hey, okay, this country opened its door to me. Now it's my time, okay, to take advantage of this opportunity and get trying to just learning English for the first 3-4 years and continue my education and other things during, because I'm a natural born activist, I realized, no, this population that I belongs to really have no voice. Okay, again, as I said, so many people are involved in resettlement programs, okay, nonprofits helping people, and they are doing great job, but nobody listen to us. And you are that one of the rare people I've seen in my life in this country. You listen to me. Not only listen to me, you validated my background, okay, my skills. And as I said, that's why I'm a director of policy and advocacy. Okay, so because you saw me. Okay, so in many, many moments, it was like I'm an invisible man. Okay, I was existing. Okay, people could feel me, okay, around, but nobody could see me. So yeah, and now you tell me why you are in this field.
Buckle up. You know this, Ali. My background came through the financial side, mm-hmm. right? But before I get into the professional side of how I journeyed to this field, I think it's important to learn a little bit more about my personal background,
mm-hmm.
and really what motivates me to do the work we're doing in our professional life and the work we're doing through this podcast to elevate those voices that you shared that often go silenced. So I grew up in a very unique circumstance. Both of my parents had struggles with addiction, and I was in effect raised by my sister. She's 18 months older than me, and that's the story of a lot of people in our country that are sort of going throughout the system. The social service system. And that was the path of my sister and I when you have parents who struggle with addiction. And so I saw really up close how hard it is to make your way through a system that's supposed to sort of bring you up. And so ended up, I found myself in a unique circumstance when I was 16 years old. I was living with my dad at the time. And I got a call from the sheriff's department in the suburbs here. And they had found my dad deceased in a hotel room, and they were calling to inform me of this. And as a 16-year-old in high school, I have no relatives here. I was met with that reality of what felt to be orphaned, right, in a pretty formative time. And I made the decision at that point that I was going to stay here and live by myself and work. And I had a wonderful support system of friends and what I would consider family, albeit not blood related, that helped me a lot. They helped me to ensure I wasn't sleeping in parks and to make sure I had a warm meal to eat. And I did that throughout high school and college. And then I sort of found my footing. And as I've gotten through, and oftentimes people will learn more about me as a person and they'll champion, look how much you've accomplished, Chris. And I've struggled with that because I don't really feel like the story is, look how much I accomplished. I feel like the story is there's a system that's built to support people like me.
Mm-hmm.
People that come from my background, that speak English, that know the system, that grew up here. And it's really sad that we have entire swaths of people and communities that have just as much potential, just as much talent and aspirations as I do. And those folks are not supported. And that was really the genesis of why I wanted to get into the social services,
mm-hmm.
is because I felt like I had a personal connection to it. And two, that I feel like the system needs to be thought about differently. And in order to think about it differently, I think it takes people who come from different perspectives. And that's what's motivated me to do the work we're doing. And I think we look forward to continuing that conversation.
Yeah. It's a very, very, very interesting point that I... I've noticed it, and I wrote about it that that support you receive from your family and that system, I call it social capital. Unfortunately, many refugees are suffering with lack of social capital, and the resettlement agencies, nonprofit, are supposed to be their social capital, and our government actually should supposed to be their social capital. But it's hard, you know, it's hard because the system is suffering, okay, or is not doing well to provide that support to the refugees. And one of the reasons I really wanted to, start the storytelling with you and talk about these barriers and systemic barriers, and bring, if the system is not supporting us well, but bring people, you know, Chicagoans, you know, lovely people, we are living next to each other. And I remember when I, one of the things I said, you trust me, I realized, okay, storytelling matters, raising awareness matters, okay, shed light on barriers, issues, challenges, and also not talking about all challenges, issues, and also sharing 60 stories, yeah, and people need to hear. And because of, you know, so many political climate, and usually, you know, all based on my experience and my knowledge, that the refugee population are always the first victim of political issues in this country. Okay, anything happen, the first victims are refugees. Okay, while they are highly screened, okay, their background check, highly screened before they arrive here. I always make a joke that only the president of the United States has to pass that background check. Okay, and refugees. But still, you know, it's based on the political climate. The refugees are always the first victim. The Trump administration, okay, they tried to close the border again for political reasons. We have a migrant crisis now. Again, the first victim are refugees, and people have reaction. I understand because the first are policymakers simplifying their issues. Okay, they don't want to address it, you know, in the right way. And also, again, storytelling matters because our goal is to humanize the population. You know, a couple of days ago, I was listening to another podcast that person was saying, human beings is not illegal. Okay, human beings is not illegal. So, you know, if you steal something, it can be illegal. But being a human, okay, cannot be illegal. And before I pass the mic to you, when I brought up the storytelling, okay, a storytelling project, I said, Chris, we have to do it. Okay, you immediately said, yes, let's do it. Okay, and it was one of the unique moments in my career life that, you know, you proved that you trust me. Okay, so they say, yes, do it, and yeah. So,
Ali, I want to talk a bit about that social capital piece, and I think there's a bunch of things there, right? And in my case, one of the elements that I think we bring a great perspective, and we want this format of our storytelling to bring forward these elements. In my story, the folks who really helped me were not family by definition. They were friends and support systems. And I think the question we ask is, how is it that I was able to do that? And what systemic things does that illuminate? That there's bias and there's injustice that is unspoken. And I think we see that in the stories and the way in which our communities support people with different accents and different skin pigments and other things. And I think what we're seeking to do, and what I've enjoyed so much about getting to know you, is when you tell stories authentically and you let the human piece shine, mm-hmm. it brings people together. And I think one thing we would say is, who wants to listen to this? Who should listen to this? Why are we telling these stories? And I think that is the heart, is we're seeking to be community builders. And the best way to build authentic community is to have a sense of belonging. And to belong means to know. And I think as you tell stories and you receive those openly, we can create an experience that fosters belonging and authenticity. And I think that's that's what we're seeking to accomplish here. And I look forward to doing it with you.
Yeah. And tell me why our stories, the name, why our stories?
Yeah, I'll tell you my why. Okay. Yes. And then I'd love to hear you use it. Our stories is really important. Resilience is the operative word there. And the collective our. And I think there's a quote I really like by someone that we probably know. Mother Teresa is the one who's credited with it. And it says, if you're ever struggling to find peace, it's because you've forgotten that we belong to each other. Mm-hmm. And I think this piece of humanity, the interconnectedness of our experiences, is really what we're doing. And I think one of the unique experiences of humanity is we struggle. We all struggle. And the struggle is not the defining moment, and it doesn't define the experience. And as we think about our stories, it's a story of resilience that says there's going to be struggle, it's going to be hard. But what is seen through that hardship is the remarkable spirit of humanity, and that actually represents the very best of us, our city, our country.
Story of resilience is beautiful. And my reason, you know, I'm always focused on refugees population. First, I thought, okay, this is R. Okay, R is from refugees. Okay, and also in my accent, R and R is same. Okay, so to me, it's our stories. You know, we are, all of us in Chicago, we are producing these stories. Okay, and and we will have, you know, our guests soon in the next episode, you know, with their expertise, lived experience, to share our stories with each other. Yeah. So, and also I took advantage of your absence, your paternity leave, because we were discussing different names. And yeah, it's okay, let's go with our stories. So yeah, I'm glad because we are recording the first episode of our stories now. Yeah.
I want to go back to something that you shared. You shared the story about you and Amber making the decision to start a family, and we have this beautiful Amelia now that's, and you shared a bit about how seeing someone, in this case me, sort of journey fatherhood and manage the professional that provided, like, oh, I can see that there's a path, and
right.
that's something that is not going to hinder me from professional advancement and so on. I want to share a bit about the other side of that, though, what I was experiencing in those moments. So you don't know this, or you didn't know this then, is, you know, we met in, you know, 2020, and 2019 was the hardest year of my life. It was really, really difficult. Went through a really rough divorce and had to sort of mourn the, I'm not going to see my kids as much as I'd want to, and the shame and guilt and all the things associated with that. And the stigma around single parenting and being a dad that, like, whatever the assumptions are going to be. And I was chasing every single day that I am going to be the very best dad I can be. And a lot of days it didn't feel like that. But coming out of that and then seeing someone like you see what I was doing as hopeful, as optimistic, was defining for me, that I was very validating for me that, Chris, you're doing it. It doesn't always look good, feel good, or sound good, but that was something that was so deeply important to me, that I am going to be the very best, most present dad I can be for my kids. And I've really appreciated you sharing that, but also seeing that in me. And
yeah.
I think the point there is this. I've seen it throughout my life, and I hope the stories we share and the stories we hear provide this. It's hope. And I think there is something really, really powerful about seeing something in yourself that either society doesn't see, that the proverbial system doesn't support, but all it takes is one person. All it takes is one person to believe in you, to see that potential, and it can unlock something inside you that you didn't think was there. And I think you've done that for me, as much as you like to say I did it for you. So
yeah, thank you.
I really appreciate it.
No, it's true. I still remember that, you know, when you decide to become a father over 30, okay, it's not easy. You always calculate every single step, you know, even your every single dollar. Okay, should I do it or not? Should I do it or not? And yeah, and you know, I thought I cannot handle it, okay, before I met you. Then your story really inspired me, and you know, I can do. And also, my life here, beyond all challenges or experience as a refugee, you know, Chicago gave me this opportunity to rebuild my life from scratch. And if you remember, I think a couple of times I mentioned when I was in Iran, I had everything but hope. When I arrived here, I had nothing but hope. So, yeah, and you know, this hope really empowered me to build my life here. You know, found my true love. Okay, I met my wife at work. Okay, we are in the same field, and building our, you know, our relationship. You know, I became a married man for the first time in my life. Then we bought our house, our car, you know, and also the most important part that I never wanted to be my own child, okay, because of my childhood, because of my lived experience in Iran, you know, my journey, my refugee journey. And I thought, okay, why should I bring another human being here? And COVID hit, you know, and many people, we are dying, okay, so there is no reason. But that hope really keeps me a simple human. And yeah, you know, many things bad happen, but this earth, this life needs good people as well. And yeah, and you know, someone like me who was totally against to have his own child. I'm for 18 months, almost 18 months, I'm a father. I cannot believe it. And yeah, this is how we impact each other in a good way, you know, and we inspire each other every day. And yeah, and this is one of the things I really love, my friendship with you and working with you for you, that each time when I meet you, I learn something from you. Yeah.
That's a perfect way to introduce this. What do you think? This is a project. You and I have worked on a bunch of projects through work. This is a new one. Help me understand what success looks like to you. We're starting this podcast together. What do you want to accomplish?
So this is very subjective, you know. The answer to this question is very subjective. You know, maybe someone else sitting in this chair, okay, would answer to your question in a different way. But to me, the success for this project, first, raising awareness, shed light on some challenges, and just remind people, all of us are human. No, this is the most important things. And beyond all this news, everyday news, bad news, you know, and yeah, we are living next to each other. My neighbors are from everywhere. I live in Westridge, okay, super diverse neighborhood, the most diverse neighborhood, I think, in this country. I have two white couples sitting, you know, next door house. I have Sudanese, I have Mexican, I have Iraqi, Syrian, from Southeast Asia folks, and all of us, you know, when we have block party, it's beautiful. I can see the whole world in that small, you know, little pocket block party. So, yeah, this is my goal with podcast, and also success in my personal level. The success is, you know, after 12 years living in this country, okay, and I really feel I'm home. Okay, again, beyond all those challenges, I'm an advocate. You know, my job is advocacy for refugees, sharing their voice, okay, talking about challenges, but I really feel I'm home. Okay, it's very unique, and because when I talk to many other refugees, they really miss their countries. They really want to go back to their countries. I have the same feelings, okay, but it's not that strong anymore. I can tell you every morning when I wake up, I cannot believe it. I'm from Shiraz, Chicago. It always takes 2-3 minutes to get loaded. They say, okay, I'm in Chicago. But, you know, anytime when I walk, you know, drive in Chicago, seeing people, and, you know, even with my accent, but I feel I'm home. Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
I've felt that same way. I, you know, obviously we've talked about our experiences being different. But so much of it is so similar. This journey to finding stability, to finding a sense of belonging and a home. And it's beautiful, because one of those things that you alluded to is the perhaps most significant underpinning of finding home is having community. People you're connected to that are living alongside you and sharing parts of your life and culture and language with people who care and are there for you. And I hope we give a picture to that, that folks that we bring and we share experiences and share stories around this table, that we're able to provide a glimpse of what home means, and that we can all be part of bringing that forward for each other and for this great city.
Yeah, inshallah.
You've taught me that one. I know a few. That's a few things. Ali, I want to revisit one other thing that you mentioned in there. I know you're a natural born activist. You talked about that. I have the privilege of seeing that up close and personal. If you could say to someone that might be listening from afar, you know, they may be not as close to Westridge, or they may not be as familiar with an RMP program, or they're not in the business that we're in. But if you were to say one thing, like, how can you help? How can you support the work we're trying to do with elevating these voices and sort of this picture of humanity? What would you tell those folks?
The one thing it's related to the question. One thing I really love about you, that you always keep yourself updated. It means, okay, you educate yourself about not only our job and also the population challenges, people, okay, migrants. I bet, okay, your knowledge of the migrant crisis is much more than mine. Okay, I believe it. So, I believe in education, and you know, because of in crisis or, you know, downtime, people, okay, it's hard to be really rational. Okay, and see the root of challenges, issues, okay, and start trying to blame each other. Okay, so I was in a panel discussion one time. I said, hey, people are not the problem. People are not the issue. The system is a problem. So, and we know the system is not. We are in the capitalist country. Okay, so they tell us, okay, we open the door to you, go build your life, No additional support. But what people can do, okay, first, really, you know, we are living in Chicago, and I cannot go in any neighborhood in Chicago and find all, you know, all Americans, no. Okay, but it's very good to learn about each other, okay, about our culture. Try to avoid stereotypes, okay, and respect each other. Okay, this is the most important. How this can happen by education, educate ourselves, okay, and ask good questions. Okay, tell me about, for example, Nowruz. Tell me about Halloween. Tell me about, you know, Ramadan. Tell me about, you know, what is your favorite food in country? Where is their, you know, favorite restaurant? You know, learning about each other, you know, it's very, very important to just realize we are simple human, all of us, you know. But unfortunately, you know, because of the, again, political climate, you know, everything is politicized now in this country. It's very unfortunate that people blame each other, really blame, okay, you are that, you know, you are that, okay, and we are facing, you know, severe issues, you know, anti-immigrant immigration policies and Islamophobia, you know, anti-sentiment and this kind of things, you know. And yeah, this is the education. And tell me, how would you answer your question?
There's a simple answer in theory. It's harder in practice, and I think that's the challenge that we would leave with folks. And get to know people. Mm. Like, actually get to know them and take an interest in what their culture teaches, their traditions. And if you don't know how, I think that's just ask the question. I would implore folks, you're not more than one or two conversations away from someone who knows a different community, a different culture. And I think what's really powerful is relationship. And as soon as there's proximity to someone that is of a different background, a different tradition of any variety, all of the bias or stereotypes fade away, and it becomes, no, that's my friend. And it's a simple gesture. Share a meal, and I'll borrow something you've taught me. And you know, we love to go to eat Persian food, and now it's one of my kids' favorites. And then whenever they eat, they get frustrated with me because I ask them to use their spoon.
It's using spoon. Yeah.
And not their forks. Just as a way to help introduce that. It's a really beautiful experience. And so I would say simply share a meal with someone who have a different culture, different cuisine, and meet them where they are.
Yeah.
And I think when you do that and you build that relationship and rapport, all of those sort of negative perceptions fade away pretty quickly.
Yeah. Thank you everyone for watching us and listening to us. Thank you, Chris. I really enjoy and looking forward to seeing you again and share our stories with you.
Thanks for tuning in to Our Stories and joining the conversation. To learn more about the podcast or get in touch, you can visit us at ourstoriespodcast.com or find us on social media. Our Stories is recorded in Chicago and co-produced by Trellis and Flex Tech AI. We'll see you next time.